Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are going to be here until 11 o'clock, taking your computer calls, comments, questions, and concerns. And we're going to be lucky enough to have in studio with us Michael Caron. He was on the show with us a few weeks back talking about electricity rates. He was a former commissioner of PURA. And he'll be in here chatting further about how a rate case happens. You know, the whole process of going through a rate case and, to figure out what these folks are doing to us. And Kathy Piedemonte is also a rate examiner, and she'll be a utility examiner for PURA. So she'll be in here as well, I suspect, but definitely Michael. And so that'll be at 10 o'clock. So stick around for that. I'm looking forward to figuring out how electricity works in Connecticut, because I really don't think we know, considering the let him eat cake approach to electricity we have in Connecticut.
I was going to ask you, does electricity work here?
No, it really doesn't. I would think at the rate we're paying, sure doesn't. So stick around for that. So as usual and customary, though, we have some technology news you may want to use.
This is technology that was used by a school district in Illinois.
Oh, to educate the kids?
Yeah. They used AI software that...
Sounds great. Wait, the AI to help educate the kids?
No.
Oh.
It has nothing to do with teaching.
Oh, no. What did they do?
This AI determines residency.
Uh-oh.
And it looks at different records that it can get a hold of, which appear to be pretty extensive.
Mm-hmm.
And they can determine whether somebody actually lives within the school district and is entitled to enroll their children.
What, okay? Entitled? Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Now, out in suburban Illinois, or suburban Chicago in Illinois, school district for the town of Alsip. A-L-S-I-P.
All right.
They decided that a woman was not living within their town and could not enroll her child because her car had been picked up on license plate readers in Chicago overnight at overnight addresses in Chicago during July and August
and
of
they
a
deduced?
Particular year. And they decided based on that she was not a resident.
Wow. And they wouldn't let her kid go.
And they wouldn't enroll her child. Now, there are legal requirements that she had to meet to prove residence.
Yes.
You know, she's got a mortgage within the town, and she's got, you know, utility bills and a whole raft of stuff that you would normally use to establish residency.
Sure.
And, I mean, you've had to do it. I've had to do it for different things.
Yeah.
And it usually works. But
not in this case.
In this case. The school district said, we're ignoring that because our AI told us this instead.
Wow.
And it's not clear whether or not they have revisited this decision or if she's been able to get this appealed or anything like that. Apparently, it's fairly new determination and things are still churning over there. But the AI that was used... is one that I hadn't heard of before. It's called Clear.
But not the airport Clear.
Not the airport security Clear, no. By Thomson Reuters, which is the company that was famous for clamping down on their patent for MP3.
I didn't even remember that.
And GIFs.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. But both of those patents have since expired, and they are now public domain.
So here we go. The suburban school system kicks you out. Now, I've always said your kid's future really shouldn't be decided by your realtor. I have found this to be an issue forever. You should be able to choose your school, as far as I'm concerned, and don't go to the failing ones. And she didn't want to send her kid to a Chicago school, let's say. Let's just say she does live in Chicago and she is cheating. You know, this is ridiculous. If it's a failing school, you wonder why these kids come out and they can't read, right? So they're using AI to keep you out of the better schools. Why don't you charge her to go? Get a a voucher system, and she'll happily pay if she's in Chicago and take her voucher and pay for your all-SIP school, and everyone's happy.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And you get, then you can hire more teachers that are better, obviously, in this school, and they can educate the kids better. I mean, I don't understand the difficulty here. I can go to any pizza shop and pay for a pizza, but I can't send my kid in America to whatever school I want them to. My realtor is the one that decides that. And in cases way back when, they would steer people.
Realtors were doing that. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And you'll even hear realtors say, I'm going to show you houses in this town because the schools are better.
Of course.
And they are engaging in steering.
Yeah. In that case, in the old days,
it's not like the old days where, certain people wouldn't be sold houses in certain neighborhoods, but you're still getting the steering effect.
Right.
And that's going to affect, the real estate markets in Connecticut.
Right.
There's fallout from that.
We'll see what happens with this. Now they're using AI to make sure you go to the right school. Speaking of AI, sorry guys. I mean, our future is all built around AI. This is almost like WWW all over again. .com bubbles, as it were. Grammarly. So one of Grammarly's experts is suing the company over its identity stealing AI feature. So basically, there's a journalist called Julia Angwin, and she's filed a class action lawsuit after learning she was included in Grammarly's expert review AI editing feature. And
what?
Then they never paid her to do that.
Oh,
so
no.
The AI is kind of just saying, well, according to Julia, you really should have put a semicolon here instead of a whatever their Grammarly suggestions might be, and didn't ask her permission or pay her to do this. Now, again, AI has been doing this kind of stealing and scraping. And I mean, we've got Green there. David Green from NPR is suing because he's our Karen and Bob AI.
Right.
Of course, it sounds just like David Green.
No, it did. When I heard that, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay.
these people are having their likenesses, she has her hard work as a journalist being stolen and then utilized as if it's her,
right,
without being compensated. So I don't know, I'm sure with AI, if AI's making so much money and it's such a good idea, why would you need to do this? Why would you need to steal that from these folks?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really crazy how these AI companies just think the entire internet and all of the content on it belongs to them.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, they fully know that there are intellectual property laws.
Right.
I mean, if somebody were to copy their software and then run it on another computer someplace and then sell the service, what would they be doing?
Right.
They'd be suing over that.
Right.
So what they're doing is stealing from content creators in exactly the way that they would never tolerate their own content being stolen.
Right. Yeah. Pretty crazy. So we'll put a link up here. The Verge has got it. It's all over the internet. This is a pretty serious article that's out there. And it really shouldn't be happening. I mean, it should be obvious. I mean, didn't we have Matthew McConaughey that decided to copyright his likeness and copyright everything? We had a story about him recently.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Yes, and his phrases, whatever phrases. Now, those are phrases that he didn't come up with. He happened to say them.
Right.
But now he's copywriting the phrases that he said. I'm not even sure how that works because he didn't own those phrases. He got paid to say the phrases. But
well, I don't know if he's really serious about staking a claim to them. He's just trying to prevent his own use of them from being used elsewhere.
Right, without his consent. In other news, you might have heard this, maybe not, but there's an Iran-linked hacking group that has been out there for a while, and they went after a U.S. medical device company called Stryker. And basically, they are saying that they went after this company and wiped all its data, really.
Yeah, this was just to clarify, this appears to be solely what we call in the business a wipe attack. And all it does is delete content from devices.
Sometimes exfiltrate it first.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't appear that was the goal of this particular attack.
Right, just completely wiped it.
Usually there is content stealing, there are things like ransoming and other stuff. But as far as we know, at least at the moment, that it appears to be limited to being a wipe attack.
And the way they did it, from what we're understanding so far, which may or may not be true, but they got it through Microsoft's Intune. Yeah. So basically, Intune is a tool, and this is what a lot of hackers do, right? They live off the land. They go after the tools that are legitimate tools that geeks like us use all the time to properly configure systems. And basically, they used Microsoft's Intune, which is designed to manage individual workstations. And they somehow got into the command and control level of Intune,
right?
And told it, even
okay,
if you
go and wipe.
Yeah, go and wipe. And you, even if you had a BYOD, which is you bring your own device to the office, even your personal device could have been wiped.
Right, because it will delete the account data for that 365 account
right.
from the device. It right. won't. It won't disable the device no. entirely. It just takes that content away.
So this is an interesting story. We have a great article about it from Krebs on Security. Brian Krebs does an amazing job explaining these types of very technical issues. If you'd like to read that, we link it on our show over at computertalkwithtab.com. But the idea here is that these bad guys are lurking in the infrastructure, right? They obviously have been here for a while. You don't just decide to wake up in the morning as a hacker and just go after Stryker. They probably have been lurking for a while.
Yeah, they had to have been. They got into the administrative end of their 365 tenant.
Yeah, so I got a feeling there's a lot of lurkers going on. The FBI talked about Salt Typhoon. This is a few years old that we brought that up, where the Chinese are lurking. So our infrastructure is a lot more vulnerable than you think. I don't want to make everybody scared or anything like that. But if they can wipe all the computers at Stryker, what would happen if they wiped all the computers at X? Pick it. Pick the thing.
Or the Pentagon.
Well, that'd be fine. but we had the issue when they had the ransom attack on that oil pipeline, right?
Yes.
And that was back in COVID time. So we'll put the stories up there for you. We got to step out for a quick break. Rob in Windsor, hang on now in Texas. That's cool. Get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. And then at 10 o'clock, we'll be talking with Michael Caron about how a rate case works. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're here till 11 o'clock, and we're going to thank you guys for getting on the line so early, because we do have our guest coming on at 10:05 talking about rate cases in electricity. That'll be interesting. But let's go to Rob in Windsor, now in Texas. What's happening there, Rob?
Hey, actually, it was from Windsor Locks, but that's all right.
All right.
And I talked to you guys many, many times. Yeah, I picked the right winter to move the Windsor Locks, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah, I've been having this virus warning and Trojan warning or whatever, popping up. Because I run Chrome and I run Mozilla at the same time. Mozilla on my left screen and Chrome on my right screen. You get both pictures. And my son came over last night. He's kind of a computer, he knows more about him than I know. But I used to teach him when he was young, and now he's teaching me.
That's what you want.
I say it again?
That's what you want.
Yep, exactly. Actually, the left screen, I cut it off, unfortunately. We ran a scan last night, and he left because it was still running.
Yeah.
But they said no virus or nothing found. It ran, and it said quick scan. And it ran, and 800,000 files, nothing found.
Yeah.
But as you can see on the right side, it says security warning, and that keeps popping up. And there's some type of AV virus or something that keeps popping up. And there was something that popped up about a Trojan horse on the right screen where I'm running Chrome.
You've got notifications that are coming in from a malicious website in Chrome, and you're. You have a good eye if you see that it's coming from Chrome, because it will show that at the bottom of the notification, but the lettering is kind of small, telling you that it's Chrome. The content of the notice is going to have larger lettering, so it tends to dominate.
So you think it's a scam?
Oh, of course it's a scam. Yeah. Absolutely, it's a scam. All you have to do is go into Chrome settings and look for notifications, and you got to edit. You have to click on site settings. We can post a link to how to do this. But you kind of have to travel down one of these IT rabbit holes in order to get to the right place to turn those off.
Okay. Yeah. Cause all of a sudden it started popping up, and every 30 to 40 seconds it pops up, and I got to click on it.
Yeah, that's
it down. Thinking, what the hell is
that's
this?
That's it. You should have told us that first, Rob. Mm-hmm. So did your son not? All right. So we got to teach both of you guys a couple things, especially if it's popping up like this. So basically, this is why we talk about OpenDNS so much. If you were running OpenDNS, guess what would probably not have happened? A, you wouldn't have gone to the site that probably delivered this to you. And B, it wouldn't have allowed the pop-ups to occur because they're malicious too. So configure OpenDNS, and if you need help from your son, have him come over, and both of you guys configure OpenDNS on your systems, because that's what will prevent this from happening. Dennis will put some links up there as far as how to try to clear this out. If you keep surfing naked without OpenDNS, you're going to end up at some dark corner of the internet.
Right. I don't do that much surfing. Mostly, I pay my bills with this. And I go to my town's websites to, pay my bills and mm-hmm. see what's happening in the new town that I live in
yeah.
to find stuff to do. Because sure. we moved down here to be with my son because he had a baby last March. Her first birthday's coming up next week.
Congratulations.
And grandma wanted to be with the grandchild. And my son lives a 10-minute walk from my house. So
nice. Have him walk over and start configuring OpenDNS because somewhere you're going or somewhere you went delivered this malware to you. And you need to get rid of it. But if you even getting rid of it is one step, but you could get it again if you don't run a web filter, which is what OpenDNS is. And it's free.
Okay. OpenDNS is on your computer talk with tabs.
We have a link
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a link to a guide that I actually had to write because the guide that used to exist on OpenDNS's tech support site went away. We'll post a link to that too.
Okay. I know you talked about it a million times and I never did it.
Now look what happened.
Now I'm a victim and I should have done it.
Yeah. You're sitting there looking at 800,000 files for no reason.
Oh, I know. I've been listening to you guys for 20 years, believe me. And I've called you many, many times when I lived in Connecticut. I used to listen to you every morning. Now I got to get up earlier. I got to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning to listen to you guys. So
well, we appreciate you doing it, and we're podcasted, so you can listen to us anytime you want, Rob.
Well, but I can't call you if I listen to you.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
But I appreciate you guys. That's why I got up this morning. I got up at 7:45 to make sure I got you.
I love it.
On early.
Appointment listening on radio.
I couldn't call you at 9 o'clock because your 10 o'clock guest would be on. And
yep.
You guys are great.
Well, thank you, Rob. Good planning. We love you too.
Yep. Bye bye.
Bye bye. So yeah, I mean. Surfing without a web filter these days, especially when that OpenDNS, yes, it's free. And I always talk about, if it's free, you're the commodity. Really what happens with the free aspect of OpenDNS is that there's a lot of telemetry that is gathered by Cisco in this case to see what you're bumping into. And what that does is it helps them then help the business communities that are paying for this web filtration, because you're a node on the network and you're coming across stuff. Who knows where you're going, right? And so they're going to gather a lot of great data about the bad stuff that's out there so they can build their better mousetrap to protect the rest of us. So in this case, you are a commodity, yes, but they're doing you a favor. And I don't think there's any other data collection that they're doing about you. I couldn't say for certain, but I think they're just simply using the stuff that's out there. And now with all the folks out there, gosh, it's like you guys are now volunteering your networks to be part of hacker DNS services. So the bad guys are actually connecting into your home computers because you're getting paid $20 to do it.
Oh.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy out there. You're not making it easy for us. But in this case, the web defense technology is something you should definitely do.
Yeah.
So we're going to be here for another hour and a half over here at Computer Talk with Tab. Everything we've talked about has been posted already over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you follow us on Facebook and you want to be part of the Computer Talk with Tab listener network and you're not a crackpot, just ask and we'll let you in, and you can be part of that community. And of course, the links are posted there. Mike G posts all that for us live. And if you want to follow us on X, the links are there as well. And then coming up at 10:05 this morning, we'll be talking about electricity, because clearly Connecticut doesn't know how it works. We'll be right back. Oh, wow. We're back.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
What happened?
Joey's running the controls back there. He had a radio brain fart.
Can you say that word over the air?
Of course you can.
I guess you can.
Of course you can. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. 860-522-9842. We'll be talking with Michael Caron of Pura and talk about how a rate case is made. You might have seen this in the news. I saw it recently. It was at the Hartford Business Journal. Eversource warns proposed community solar bill could add $6 billion to Connecticut ratepayers' costs over the next 20 years. So the House Bill 5471, was in a public hearing Thursday before the General Assembly's Energy and Technology Committee. And the Eversource says the testimony is argues the bill is riddled with legal, financial, and technical problems that would ultimately harm the ratepayer it purports to help. This is coming from the electric company, right?
Oh, okay. Because they want to help us so much to begin with, right?
Yes, they do. that's what they say, Dennis. So it's going to – here's the thing, right? The bill would direct Pura – to establish a clean energy program by December 2026, allowing private companies, municipalities, and cooperatives to build and operate solar installations or battery storage facilities and sell subscriptions to the rest of us.
Because we need more solar arrays and battery arrays too, right?
I don't know what we need, Dennis, because whatever we're doing now is costing too much.
I'm not sure about that myself either, but okay.
Subscribers would receive credits on their utility bills based on their share of the system's output, without needing to install any equipment on their property. Participation would be capped at 600 megawatts per year. And so basically Eversource administers several existing clean energy programs, says the bill's 600 megawatt cap annually would allow more than three times as much generation capacity. The increase would lead to more than $300 million annual net costs, the utility argues. And basically it's going to go after those folks who are still part of the system, who are paying the standard rate for Eversource. If you're buying less of their expensive energy, then whoever's left buying that expensive energy is going to pay more.
Right.
Now, Eversource is warning of a potential death spiral. Ooh, that's scary. That would push standard service customers toward retail suppliers. As more customers leave, costs would concentrate on fewer remaining ratepayers. Same thing with like water utilities. You try to conserve water. I think I told you I was on the Board of Water Commissioners.
Yeah.
If you buy less water, guess what we got to charge?
More for the water that you do sell.
Because the actual infrastructure doesn't change. The people managing it doesn't change. The insurance doesn't change. Yes, we have a little less cost in chemicals to treat the amount of water you're not using. But guess what? The rates go up.
Yep.
So the funny thing here is the proponents of the bill, here's the reason they're doing it. They argue the model extends the benefits of renewable energy to renters, low-income households, and others who cannot install rooftop panels. That is the dumbest sentence I've ever heard. And here's why. These people who are saying they're going to let low-income folks who can't afford their electric bill now participate in a green energy program, and the reason they can't afford electricity now is because of the other green energy programs that we're paying. What ding-dong thinks they're going to be like, oh, yeah, sign me up for that? I mean, they can see their breath in their apartments in the same way my own kid can. You know, that's the reason you're pushing this. I want to see competition, definitely. And if this offers competition and Eversource is whining about it, I don't know that I mind. But that's
right.
It needs to make sense, and it shouldn't cost us more. If it costs us more, then the math doesn't make any sense.
And you shouldn't be doing it. Right.
And that's, I'm not the sharpest tack in the drawer. We already pay the second or third highest electricity rates in the country. And they want to do this as a way for low-income folks to be able to participate in the lunacy that's killing us now? I come on, man. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But that's just lunacy to me. We'll put the link up to the story from the Harvard Business Journal. But directing Pura is, again, the issue. And that's why we're having Michael Caron in here. Pura is like a victim of this stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when people complain about what Pura does, you got to remember they're following orders.
They're following orders from the legislature.
They're like a military unit. They take orders from the people who issue them. In this case, it's the legislature.
Right. And here we are. So yet another possibility. Now, I don't know if I trust what Eversource is saying on this article or not.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah, you have to point that out.
Yeah. But
there is a little self-interest here.
But to say low-income people want to actually participate in solar panels on their roof, that's just crazy. Let's go to Adam in East Hartford next. What's happening, Adam?
Gentlemen, I listen to the show faithfully. If you're going to call up, you know, and you have questions now and then, you want to, return the favor by listening faithfully. Hey, I got a comment, and then also I can make a question out of it. You know, I've talked to you about hacks before and scams and somebody trying to pull a fast one.
Maybe. Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah, one time it was with my bank, somebody didn't try to steal the account, thank God. But this time, many, many years ago, and I'm not preaching here, but I used to go to some Christian singles events, and the point being, we had gotten a false hack on our cell phone saying that one of the gals that led the singles group was stuck as a missionary in another country needing money right away.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting scam. Well, there was this lady, not that this is important, but a Christian lady I knew that her ex-husband was Jewish, and she came to our New York area Christian singles events down in Danbury.
Yeah.
And I just got an email from her, and it just said, you're invited to something, click on this.
Yeah, don't do that. Anything that's so sketchy, that's way too sketchy.
And I haven't talked to the lady in 10 years. One time her and I, you know, we met for the Celtic concert at that church in Hartford and had a meal at the Applebee's in Southington 10 years ago. But then I haven't heard from her in 10 years and I get an email like that. You know
right.
what I mean?
That's the kind of stuff you got to be careful with.
Definitely.
So it's a scam, Adam.
My brother, he's not crazy that I use the library to check email, but they do send me a cell phone text. Is that a good double-factor protection system?
Well, when you're using a public computer like that to read your email, if somebody else before you, in the old days we would warn people about if some hacker sat there at the library and loaded a keylogger on that computer, they could be reading your email too. So yeah. When you're looking at it, when you're using a public tool like that, I wouldn't do anything personal on it. I would use it as a resource, like a, you know, like an encyclopedia, but I would never use it as a tool to look at my email or my anything.
Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't do any banking on it or anything like that.
I'm glad you pointed it out, because what about if I'm sitting in the library chair and I use their Wi-Fi in my personal cell and cover everything? Is that still a little risky or not as much?
No, it is. It's so any kind of public area that you're using the public Wi-Fi. In an airport, in a library, there could be another guy literally sitting in the chair next to you with a tool scanning the network to see who's on it and what they're doing.
Right.
And it's called Wireshark. It's a public tool. Mm-hmm. Anybody can use it. And so when you're in a public area, I wouldn't do anything on their network, period, unless you had a VPN. So if you establish a VPN, then you can do what you want.
Yeah.
I wouldn't transfer funds out of your 401k to your
IRA. No. You ain't going to be doing that.
Yeah. But yeah, any public area Wi-Fi, I would recommend you never use Wi-Fi if you can avoid it anymore. Cell phone, your cell service is pretty much capped. You get quote unquote unlimited Wi-Fi to the point where if you're paying $30 a month for most services for good Wi-Fi, it's all you need. You shouldn't even have to be doing any kind of public Wi-Fi these days for anything.
Yep.
Avoid it.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for always keeping us safe, and I will keep listening to the program, all right?
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So, yeah, I mean, any kind of public Wi-Fi these days is an issue, so be careful. Let's go to Joe in Berlin. What's happening, Joe?
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I got a comment on your opening statement there about the kid going to school.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're bordering on political stuff here.
Of course. Yeah, but the technology is being used, but I can still have my opinion.
Okay. but who's going to pay for the school? That's the issue there.
Yeah, that'd be the voucher concept. If you were able to get a voucher from Chicago, you go pay for your public school service in Aslip, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, anyhow.
You're yelling at me, but you agree. There we go. I love it.
Well, no, we got to pay for what we use.
Of course. You know, of course. No free lunches here, Joe. The only thing that's free here is our show.
It is.
Oh, hey, before I forget, you know what? You're talking about, you know, this using public computers.
Yeah.
At work, we cannot use a wireless mouse or a wireless keyboard anymore.
Interesting.
Everything has to be hardwired.
Oh.
Because
hacking.
Somebody could be, hacking.
Yeah. You're right. We've had stories like that. We've talked about it. Yep.
Yeah,
are you launching the space shuttle or something, Joe, where you work?
Yes.
Awesome.
On my personal computer at home, I have a hard drive. I have a C, a D, and an F.
Mm-hmm.
When I first got it, I only installed Windows on drive C. I don't save any information to it or anything else like that. I don't use it other than for the operating. I'm getting a warning now saying that it's getting full.
Yep.
Full of what? I don't know. How do I clear it out?
Full of Microsoft.
Well, I think there you may not be saving your own private data to it. But I think there probably is a user profile on there for you, and that is probably accumulating data.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of techniques to look at, you know, where it's going and what is being built up. We can post an article about how to go about finding what is taking up all that space and maybe getting rid of some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll give you a chance to analyze your drive and figure out what's going on.
How old is the machine, Joe?
Oh, I can't upgrade it to Windows 11 last year.
You upgraded to Windows 11 last year, you said?
I cannot.
Oh, you can't? It's that old.
No. Yes, sir.
All right.
But it still works just good. And I have everything backed up. I'm religious about backing up my information.
That's good. Do you have the ESU, the extended security update, so that you can still get these security protections?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. All right. So, we'll put a link up here to see how you can clear it out. You've definitely built up probably a large profile and a lot of stuff over the years that need to be cleared out. You probably had a smaller hard drive to begin with. So it does make sense.
Well, it's a little over a terabyte.
Yeah, but you said it was partitioned into a C and a D, right?
No. I have physically.
They're physical drives.
Physical drives.
Oh,
so it's a 1 terabyte C drive and you're running out of space and you didn't save anything?
Yep.
That's unusual.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. So, I mean, it could be a profile, but we were thinking that's where Dennis was going. He was thinking it was maybe a smaller C drive and you're filling it up with
but
a terabyte.
Either way, the article that we're going to post about it is going to give him the tools he needs to find out what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I would appreciate it.
All right, Joe.
I want to keep this thing till it dies.
All right. That's that's the old way to do it. I appreciate it. All right. You're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you very much. And, hey, keep up the good work. I love your show.
We'll try.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. You can run out of space even with a terabyte drive and you don't even know what you're putting on it. That's kind of unusual, though.
Yeah. Well, hey, my Windows computer at home has a 1 terabyte C drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's starting to fill up. And I've already been taking a look at, you know, where it's all going and why it's there.
All right.
I just have a lot of programs installed.
Well, yeah.
That's one of the
issues.
You're
a geek. He didn't make it sound like he was doing any of that. So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. So feel free to get online before the 10 o'clock hour. And then at 10 o'clock, we have Michael Caron from Pura coming in to talk about a rate case so you can understand how maybe a little better the electric rates are hitting us the way they are in Connecticut. So we'll be right back. All right. We are back and raring to go. Feel free to get online between now and 10 o'clock. We'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. 860-522-9842. And do you have anything you want to talk about there, Dennis, before we wait for calls?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up something that we had mentioned a while back. It might have been like a year ago or maybe even more.
Oh, it's a Paul Harvey story, the rest of the story kind of thing?
Yeah, a little bit. We talked about Adobe charging cancellation fees for their subscription plans because they don't sell software anymore. You have to subscribe to it.
Major cancellation
and
fees,
and once you've started, if you cancel, you have to pay a fee. And in some cases, they make it difficult to even cancel at all anyway.
Right.
What we had discussed a little bit more ago was a Department of Justice case against them, a lawsuit that had been filed. Yeah. Well, that's just been settled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they finally settled it after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe Pinky swears they won't engage in the same practices again. And of course, they deny that they did anything wrong in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's back to business as usual, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah. But they've settled.
There you go. Yeah.
They've settled and said, all right. Yeah. Cancellation fees, you know, to get rid of something you don't want. It's in our industry too, as MSPs, managed service providers.
Yeah.
You know, I always joke to my prospects and my customers, you can fire your lawyer. You can fire your doctor. You can fire your accountant, but you can't fire your IT guy. And MSPs lock companies in to multi-year expensive monthly support services that if you decide you don't like these guys for whatever reason, you have to pay massive fees to exit. Now, Adobe just found out that that's not cool.
Right.
Why is it a thing in MSP land? Why is it that I can fire my doctor, fire my lawyer, fire my accountant? Nope, they don't hit me with fees. But my IT company is allowed to say, well, this is lost revenue, and I'm going to collect the year and a half left on your contract because I said I could in the contract you signed. Well, I would recommend people read your contract because you shouldn't be doing that.
That's number one. I mean, you got to keep your eyes open when you go into these agreements in the first place.
But so as Adobe has found out, not cool. And I'm hoping the MSP industry finds it out too. Tab has never locked any clients ever into a contract. We simply earn their business every month. We realize that sometimes we may not be perfect, right? That stuff happens. But in the case of our competitors, you're stuck with them, even if you hate their guts. And you just can't get rid of them unless you pay a massive fee, which is typically the remainder of the contract itself that you said you were going to buy. So they sell it to you and they're going to get paid and they can walk away and do whatever they want. And it should be just like Adobe found out. It shouldn't be something that exists in our industry, but it does. Every other professional industry that I know of doesn't lock you in this way. So what are these MSPs afraid of? Are they afraid of earning your business? I mean, we know IT problems are trouble.
They are.
Very frustrating. They are. Nobody calls us up and says, everything's great. Nice to chat with you guys. Right? And when you remind them that you kept everything great, they don't realize that that's what they're paying for. But right. They only call you up when you're having a problem.
Yeah.
But that's the nature of our business.
So. Yeah, that's how it is.
Anything else you want to bring up there, Dennis, before we go to the top of the hour?
Well, I was hearing about here's another fallout story.
Yeah.
We heard about the Salesforce tenants that were getting hacked.
Yes.
Majorly. Several months ago.
Yep.
And a lot of them were. Mm-hmm. Well, another one finally was revealed. Mm-hmm. There's another wave of companies that were hit because of the Salesforce
breach
a long time ago. And these are... The companies being hit now are not ones that were hit originally in the breach.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's now fallout because of the data that had been gained by the scammers. They're now using it for other purposes.
Wow.
And you know, every once in a while when we hear about one of these major breaches, I'll say, you know, we're going to continue to hear about this because, mm-hmm. you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to hear about something that happened because of this data that got into the hands of hackers.
Right. And they're going to leverage it against you.
Yeah, exactly. We got more of this.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but with these major breaches open the door for long term, as in years of breaches. As a matter of fact, LastPass.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Now, what's happened with them recently mm-hmm. is somebody is spoofing them. They're sending out emails that look like they're coming from LastPass. They mm-hmm. aren't from LastPass. There's no breach there right now,
mm-hmm.
but they're using the data that they got from the LastPass
breaches
in the past, and they're using them to gin up these emails and try to, you know, get back into these password vaults.
Right, because they're going to trick you into putting in your password, your master password is what they're going to trick you to
right.
do.
And they know that you were a customer because you were part of this breach in the past.
Yeah, that's
and
the issue.
It keeps these things keep coming back. Years later, they keep coming back. It's terrible.
It is. It's not what we got in the business for, is it, Dennis?
No, not at all.
So we're going to be here till 11 o'clock, and we're looking forward to our guests from Pura coming up. So Michael Caron, and we think also Kathy Piedemonte will be joining us to talk about how a rate case works as far as how we get to where we are, maybe with rates and electricity rates and how Pura adjudicates it or deals with it, however you want to call it, where they're going to be in studio to try to explain how electricity works in Connecticut. Hopefully it won't make your hair hurt, but since it's the base requirement for a computer, let's start there.
Yeah.
We're going to be right back.